This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This Week in TV History now has its own podcast you can enjoy. This Week in TV History with Tony Figueroa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you find podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Sally Kellerman, and you are listening to TV Confidential. Aren't you lucky?
The game of life is hard to play.
Ed Roberts, with a reminder that Eric Roberts will join us at the top of the hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you're listening to a segment of This Week in TV History that originally aired in September 2012, in which Tony, Donna, and I take a look at the premiere of MASH in September 1972 and the impact that MASH went on to have on television.
I know we're jumping around, but as long as we're on the subject of the final episode, we did a segment a couple weeks ago with our friend Wes Hyatt on the highest rated TV shows of the last 50 years. Obviously, MASH set the record in March. Breaking Who Shot JR, which broke the record of The Fugitive. And I said this on the air, I'll say it again, in my opinion, it was the worst episode of the series because it went on about 90 minutes too long.
Wasn't the episode originally supposed to be a one-hour closer?
It was supposed to be a one-hour closer, and they kept stretching it because, and I understand why they stretched it, because advertisers, you know, CBS knew this was a once-in-an-opportunity. You can charge a premium for advertisers, and so the longer the show is, the more advertising you can charge. So I understand that, but at the same time, it was a very stretched out, prolonged thing. They kind of undercut the main story of that episode, which is Hawkeye's breakdown.
Yeah. But you had Hawkeye's breakdown, and you had the war coming to an end.
I know, but To get from A to Z, you had to have all these other sort of things, and like the storyline where Mulcahy loses his hearing, I thought was, you know, they could have done without that; it wouldn't have hurt the show. But even with the overextended 2.5 hour running length, I know they're originally going to run it 8 to 10:30, and then someone in the network says we should end at 11 because it's a great lead-in for the affiliates in the 11 o'clock news. And so, you know, that's what, so they ran an episode of Alice from 8 to 8:30, and then from 8:30 to 11 it was MASH. And so that's why you had that odd 2.5 hour
Yeah, that was unreal.
Length.
And then when they syndicated, they had to trim that. And some of the...
I don't think it's part of the rerun package.
Not necessarily part of the rerun package, but they would use it sometimes, like one of the local Fox affiliates out here would do that, you know, to either, you know, that the show's coming back or the show's leaving, and then they would end the run, you know, like if it stopped showing on that network, like, you know, right. Or that they would get that movie to play to kind of mark that, you know, their syndication deal with this channel is over, so they would have some sort of
Would they air it as 5 episodes?
No, they would usually air it as like a TV movie.
Yeah, I know.
But they would cut it down to like 2 hours. So you might not see Colonel Potter saying goodbye to his horse or Father Mulcahy praying to God as to why did he take away his hearing. You know, and so you had a lot of those moments were trimmed out
when
for
FX,
the interest of time.
When FX ran, and I believe FX would run it as a 2.5 hour.
They would run it as a two. TV Land would do that, and sometimes they would run the movie as part of a marathon to start the first episode,
right.
And then after they would run the whole thing, then they would end with a 2 hour movie.
Yeah.
And they would usually have a couple of the reunion shows.
Yeah.
The one that Shirley Long did, and the other one that they did, that Mike Farrell hosted. So they would put that. So it does have some run later on, but also the goodbye, farewell, amen was not the last thing they did. There was an episode that they shot that was actually the last, the time capsule episode.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
That was actually the last episode, and Alan Alda does talk about that with the Archives of American Television, that you had all of this press in the soundstage. So this very poignant moment amongst them is interrupted because as soon as they said, and cut, then all the microphones come out. Goodbye, farewell, amen. It was a nice episode for Alan Arbus, Sidney Freeman. The rest we can discuss. I think the biggest question about the final episode is, how come, like, BJ left on a motorcycle, Charles left on a garbage truck, Colonel Potter left on a sword. How did Hawkeye score a helicopter out of the 4077?
Because he was the star of the
show.
Exactly.
Yeah. And why was he the last to leave?
Because he was the star
of the show.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Real quickly, Donna, you want to mention that the show itself, both the book and the show, is based on the experiences of actual Korean War
MASH personnel, people who actually did the meatball surgery, and many of the stories came out of that. And there's some of the most poignant scenes or most storylines in the series.
Yeah.
The introduction of the African-American soldiers, where they were treated, the one where they actually perform surgery, unnecessary surgery on an officer so he would leave. He was killing too many people. And I believe BJ was here. BJ said, no, I can't do that. Hawkeye
took out his appendix and turned. BJ had the line that you just took care of a symptom. The disease continues.
Right.
But I think the interview one where Father Mulcahy says, on a cold winter day when, they cut into the body, the steam rises, and to see the surgeon warm their hands on an open wound, he said, how can you look at that and not be affected by it? That was actually a line from one of the chaplains that was at one of the MASHes in Korea. So they took actual quotes, lines, stories, anecdotes.
And I think that brought the series, especially the earlier seasons, really grounded them.
It did have its humanity.
Well, no, it started off, as we said before, it started off as an extension of the Robert Altman movie, which is sort of a Marx Brothers approach.
Yeah.
To
I think there were elements of the Marx Brothers. There was an element of Animal House.
Right.
Before Animal House, and
it was a political satire / madcap comedy about a horrible situation.
Yeah.
And then
and there was the episode where Hawkeye's friend from Crabapple Cove gets killed.
Is that sometimes you hear the bullet?
Sometimes you hear the bullet, and that was one where the network, I believe, posted, or was it Larry Gilbert, said, what is this, a situation tragedy?
Right.
And Larry Gilbert said, they're in wartime. You need that. You
right.
need to remind everyone that they're in wartime.
Right. One of McLean Stevenson's best moments on the show, rule number one, men die. Rule number two, young men die.
Yeah.
Young men
yeah, yeah.
die.
And command school, yeah.
Right.
Doctors can't change
right.
rule
doctors
number one.
Can't change rule number one, right. Mm-hmm.
And so all of these guys had their dramatic moments. All these guys who were incredibly funny had their moments and had some wonderful lines written for television. And they all got to have that point. Even Radar got to be the smartest guy in the room once in a while.
The one, and again, this is just a me thing. When Radar left the series, rather than bring in another character, they basically recast from within by promoting
Klinger. Yeah.
Now, I understand behind the scenes. I mean, the show is, what, in its eighth year at the time. As the show is on longer, it becomes more costly because salaries go up mm-hmm. and this, then, the other thing. So, yeah, it's probably cost efficient to promote Klinger rather than bring in
now, there was some talk, and I just heard this recently, that they wanted to make Sidney Freeman a regular after Gary Berghoff left. And he and Alan Arbus did not want to But he did. He was much more regular at the 4077.
Yeah.
For a good hunk of the latter years, he would be making more visits, even if it was just for the poker game.
As was Edward Winter as Flag.
Flag.
Who was sort of the closest thing that came to replacing Larry Linville.
Yeah. That's a very you would have him come in and he would get more absurd.
Right.
And I would love to talk to people who were there that knew the Colonel Flag and wondered, could he have taken it further?
Right.
Were there people that were actually that, you know, I mean, as Colonel Flag, when he's introduced to Charles, I thought that was one of the funniest interactions because, you know, everyone knew him, dealt with him, but Charles toyed with him. Like a cat toying with a mouse who wanders into the house, and you know, before going for the kill, it's just going to play with it.
Yeah.
And that was the whole run of the episode. Charles got to play with Colonel Flag for the whole run of the episode and made him look like a total buffoon at the end and reveled in every moment of it.
Before we forget, we should mention Loretta Swit and the evolution of Margaret Houlihan.
From Hot Lips to Margaret.
From Hot Lips to Margaret. And I know the episode The Nurses, which I think was a year four or year five show. I think a lot of people consider that, you know, the real transition. But there are moments, even in the first year, there are moments where there's a nice dynamic between her and Trapper.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, they kind of looked out for each other a couple of times, and there were moments where she would let her hair down with either Trapper and with either Hawkeye and BJ or Hawkeye and Trapper, and let them and by extension let the viewers know what she really thought of Frank Burns.
Yeah, there was something when she came back. Yeah, with Donald, you know. Then again, you know, Donald Penobscot is no Frank Burns.
Right.
So once in a while, it's like there was stuff. She would speak, respectively of Frank when Hawkeye was put in command and didn't know what the hell he was doing, and was just frustrated with the job. And she said, "Well, if only Frank Burns could see you now."
Remember, she was portraying a woman in this man's army.
Right.
And imagine back in the 50s, that must have been a tough position. Especially, she's trying to be in the army.
Right.
She is trying to be the disciplinarian.
And until Colonel Potter showed up, she was the only person who was regular army.
Right.
Because everyone else was Army Reserve. They were brought in, or as BJ said, I think he said misplaced civilian. And then when Colonel Potter came in, I mean, that was another thing. When they would replace cast members, they would always go for the opposite of what they had before.
Right.
Colonel Potter was regular Army, faithful husband, disciplined, and a true leader.
Yeah, but at the same time, and a good leader in that he knew what he had, and even though he was regular Army and far more by the book than Frank Burns was.
He knew he was in charge of civilians.
Yes. And so he would let them do their job and he didn't mind having a belt.
But he didn't let anybody call him by the first name.
That's right.
Everyone tried, it never took.
Right.
I think maybe Father Mulcahy at certain points of sage advice could address him as Sherman.
Right.
But other than that, no, he was always Colonel. And you replace Wayne Rogers with Mike Farrell. Again, not a Lothario, a dedicated family with a newborn baby. So you would, you know, same shoe size, same broad shoulders, but still. And then BJ had twice issues with the Fidelity Wagon.
Right.
Where Trapper had weekly issues with the Fidelity Wagon.
But Trapper didn't care.
Trapper didn't care.
Right.
That's just the way it was.
Now, there is something also about Trapper. Trapper was a well-defined character, a thoracic surgeon, a chest cutter, and, you know, what Charles would be primarily. And when the focus became less about the two of them, Hawkeye and Trapper, became more about Hawkeye,
right.
That was one of the reasons why Wayne Rogers decided to leave, because there wasn't that focus on what his specialty was and what he could do. He
right.
was playing second fiddle to Alan Alda, and it turned out he never signed his contract. There was a few little legal wranglings there, and he decided it was a shame. I wish they could have done an episode where at least
he
could have said goodbye.
Right.
But, you know, that's just the way it goes. And the same thing with Larry Linville. Radar's Goodbye, I thought, was very well done. Henry's Goodbye is seriously television history.
Mm-hmm. It's television at its best.
Radar, you know, planning a party and the party's interrupted by wounded.
Right.
You know, and that's how he departs. And
Hawkeye. And the teddy bear.
And the teddy bear, leaving the teddy bear behind and Hawkeye saluting him.
Right.
Which he only did on a couple occasions. He saluted Radar when he got his Purple Heart, when he said goodbye. And I think in the final episode, that was his gift to Colonel Potter.
You can enjoy Tony Figueroa's standalone podcast, This Week in TV History, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find audio. Eric Roberts will join us. We come back. Eric Roberts, Oscar-nominated and three-time Golden Globe-nominated actor. Then we will play part two of our conversation with Emmy Award-winning writer-director Joseph Doherty. All that coming up. We come back for hour number two of TV Confidential. Stay with us. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.